Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah. Austin Film Festival was an amazing adventure for me. Yes But Why was invited to join the press corps, and I spent the better part of Friday the 25th and Saturday the 26th doing interviews in and around the Driscoll Hotel in downtown Austin. In my next interview, I chatted with filmmaker Drew Rosas. Drew and his creative partner, Nick Summer, have created a funny web series called Shangri-La. Listen in as we chat about the magic of editing, doing PA work on commercials, and Drew's newfound love of composing music. Check out the upcoming AFF 26 screening of Shangri-La on Tuesday, October 29th at 3:45 p.m. at the Rollins Theater, or go to the Shangri-La website and watch the whole series at home.
Theater, there was definitely theater around. I didn't get as much into theater as film and video making. I sort of jumped right into that as a kid.
Camcorder, all that?
You know, the dad's camcorder, and realized it was the magic of editing that did it for me.
On the camcorder with the VCR?
Two VCRs.
Yep.
Play, record, and when you realize you can do a shot, reverse shot, like, that blew my mind as a kid. It just blew my mind, and I was like, I'm making it. It felt like a real movie.
Yeah, you're doing it.
And that, once I kind of saw that movie magic and that I could create that, I was just hooked from there. I'm still doing it now. This is like 30 years later. I'm still at it. So, yeah, I kind of just got the bug. And then I used it in high school. You know, I went to this small town high school in Menominee, Wisconsin, and they always wanted you to, you know, write your book report or your paper, your essay or what have you. And I would always say, like, can I do a video project instead? And they're like, of course you can. That's like above and beyond. Literally, no, for me, that was fun. And just way, like, I'd have fun with my friends, easier for me. And I wouldn't have to do all the writing and rewriting and stuff. I just make a video. So I figured out this little hack in the high school system. And then I just did video projects for every single class. And got great.
They really let you do it.
They let me do it, and from their perspective, it was above and beyond. I was thinking outside the box, and they encouraged it, and I got really great grades in all these videos, and just had fun doing it. So,
man.
Then I was kind of hooked, and then ended up going to film school after high school.
I bet the filter of that really actually helped you learn better, because you were able to filter it through something you loved, as opposed to just rote memorization like regular school. Like, you're like, yeah, I'll make this into a movie, and then you actually have to look it up and know stuff to make the movie, and then you learn it so much better. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they praised you for it and weren't like, all right, enough videos.
I think it was at that one point in, like, the late 90s where, the video editing wasn't quite as massively available yet. Like, the computer systems weren't quite there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they were there, but they weren't used. So it was sort of like a new thing for them, and they couldn't believe it. Like, it was blowing these teachers' minds before they realized how easy that is to do.
Yeah.
And now everyone has
that. Well, they couldn't do
it. Yeah, so I think I kind of just got ahead of the curve and got lucky in that regard. But.
Yeah, hey, well, you know what, though? I mean, it's a wonderful thing when people do things differently than the rest of the crowd, and I met you. That in and of itself was like, this kid's great. He's standing out in his own way. He's making it work. So where'd you go to film school?
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I went to Peck School of the Arts, which is an art school within the University of Wisconsin program. And it was an experimental film program. So it was based on avant-garde, experimental filmmaking, handmade films, and 16mm film.
Wow.
So I learned first on 16mm. Before video. I mean, I had used video and I'd done it in high school, like I said, but in that film program, you learn first to cut and splice film, shoot and process your own film, and light it.
Like,
and
really cut it.
Cutting
like, old
it,
day.
Cutting
yeah.
it, like, when you cut it, there's no undo button.
Right.
There's no Command-Z.
Yeah.
You make sure that's the frame you want to cut on.
Yeah.
You can always trim. You can keep trimming down, but you can't really. It's hard to add it back. You can a little, but you'll get like some jumping around in the film strip. So, You know, you got to be like, really, and also shooting, you know, you get a roll of 60 millimeter film, I think, gives you 4 minutes of time.
Wow.
And so you're very particular about where you aim that camera and what you're going to film. You think about it, you talk about it, you plan it, you rehearse it, you do it over and over, and then you do one take, and that's probably your take. Yeah. Maybe you'll do two if you're really feeling risky. But you need, because every time when you shoot on film, you got to pay for it three times. You have to buy the film, which is expensive. Then you got to process the film, which is another cost. And then you have to basically reprocess again for the master. So it's like,
wow,
you're really paying for it three times, and
yeah.
So it adds up. So you have to be very, very intentional with what you're doing, I guess.
I'm so glad they taught you that. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that went to film school that did not get practical knowledge. So the fact that, like, you physically went and, like, cut film and learned how to do that kind of stuff, that hands-on stuff must be so helpful, especially even now, like, just feeling the ease of the digital, or like, yeah, just keep talking, we can roll forever, because it doesn't matter as much.
The cards are getting bigger and bigger, and you can just, you can just roll and roll and roll. So you can just be like, let's just start filming, we'll kind of figure it out as we go. But there's something about film that trains you to be very specific about what your vision is and what you're going for, and just and executing it. I'm guilty as anyone to like using the luxury of digital technology. But it's nice to have that at my roots, just like learning that other way first.
It'd be like going, listen, I don't need surgery. I have these leeches. I'm fine. Like, you're like, no, you have the technology. Use it. Like, absolutely. Make your stuff as great. Like, it went with you. Like, as you learned with it. And now your, like, skill is at the height of the technology, so that you can use it and do much better things. I mean, I'm glad. It's just cool that you got to be part of all of the, and also clearly we're in a similar generation, but like that we got to see all of the technology, like from the really difficult actual film, now we're into the digital, we got to play with it all.
Yeah.
And that's really great.
Yeah, I feel actually really lucky being on that cusp of like, you know, like, I guess I'm like maybe one of the first millennials. Like, I'm the oldest millennial, but you know, being of the generation that, I am the oldest.
The
millennial.
Oldest millennial.
I'm the oldest
sure.
one.
Sure. He's 73. He's a great millennial.
But it's just something nice about it. I love having touch phones in my past. Like, in my childhood, you had a landline. And then, like, I'm not too old where the technology was inaccessible to me. I still had. Be able to learn it and pick it up really quickly, but I still got to have like that nostalgic period in my childhood. It was like that transition happened right when I was like coming of age, and it was just like, I feel really lucky to have kind of both of those sides of the millennium in my history. So
absolutely, I mean, if only just because you're so educated in a way that like makes you just a better filmmaker because of everything you've been able to go through.
Yeah.
So after college, you've learned everything. You're so great now. What's your journey after that? How do you get from Milwaukee to LA? How many movies you making? Is it you and your friends? How's it going?
Yeah. Right after I started actually working as in an internship on a feature documentary when I was a senior in film school, and then
cool.
That led to one of the producers on it was also a producer for commercials shooting in Milwaukee, and so I basically went straight into being a production assistant right out of school, and just started doing commercial work. And I worked for about maybe a year and a half, 2 years, just doing commercials and just making money and trying to have a career in it. Money's nice. And then I hit this point where I was like, you know, I like the money, it's fine, and it goes a long way in Milwaukee, but you know, I kind of like lost that. There's something nice about film school where you're forced to be creative. You have these deadlines, you have things that keep you active in that field and exercising those muscles. And so there's something about, I just had that drive, I need to get back into making stuff. So I saved up some money, and then I just basically decided I'm going to put everything into a film, and I came up with this concept. It was originally called Rocky Trails, although I ended up making it the title changed when I created it into a film called Blood Junkie, which is a horror comedy shot in Wisconsin, and it's basically a 75-minute, really short feature film that's just ridiculous 1980s throwback, fun comedy horror, to the extremes. And I got all my friends together. We created a massive team. And that really started sort of like our filmmaking tribe. Even like the people I work with on that project, I'm still working with many of them now.
Awesome.
The main actor in it is actually my co-creator on my most recent project, Shangri-La. So like, this is about 10 years now we've been working together.
Yeah.
And it was just like, let's see how this works. I don't know. I didn't know what it was going to take to make a feature film. I didn't quite understand like what would happen with it, but it was just throwing myself into it, and I had such a great experience that it was just kind of like, had to keep going from there. So.
Yeah, man. That's so fun that the people that you worked with even back then, you're still working with. Do you find that that's important for you, like finding collaborators you can trust, that, and when you trust them, do you like continue working with them for a while? I mean, you know, there's a lot of wacky people that can mess with stuff, so when you find somebody good.
Yeah, you know, and it's just like anything, you know, you naturally filter out the relationships that don't click.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Nick Summer, we just see eye to eye on literally like 98% of the things.
It's awesome.
And we just have the same goals, we have the same sense of humor, which is really hard to kind of come by, someone that has the same comedy leanings as you. So it just, our partnership just sort of, it just sort of grew from there. Whereas I've worked with a lot of other people that, you know, sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's just like normal, but it's the ones that really click that you keep around, and you sort of just naturally filter out the, you know, the wacky ones.
Yeah,
if they're the wrong kind of wacky.
Right. Yeah, I was definitely using wacky as a pejorative there, for sure. Even though it could be quite sweet.
Yeah.
No. I was like meanies and terrible.
I've had some
dramatic
bad
personalities. Oh. You know, there's a lot of that.
Anytime you're in a creative, and the thing, especially in filmmaking, there's so many different creative people you have to collaborate with, because you're really incorporating all these different fields into one medium. So you're going to run into creative differences.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. And, you know, you have to, a big part of, I think, being a filmmaker is balancing that all out. And we always try to make our shoots, first and foremost, really fun to be a part of. You're not going to make a great paycheck from us. You're going to be like doing favors, working like crazy hours and doing ridiculous stuff, but you're going to be having a time of your life, and the stories will last forever, and hopefully the friendships will too. So like, as long as people are having fun, you're just going to have such a better crew and time out there on set. And,
yeah. When did you decide to start exploring the idea of a series as opposed to feature films?
That was with Shangri-La, my most recent project. So I did Blood Junkie, and then I moved to L.A. and did all the editing, living out of my friend's apartment and crashing on his couch and just, like, editing on my computer on the side of the room. And then I ended up shooting another feature horror movie with Nick a couple years later called Billy Club. And in the process of making those two feature films and taking it to the film market in L.A. and finding a sales agent and selling it and distributing, and that whole side of the industry that as a creative you don't always think about, you know, like I put so much time into the ideas of creating and not so much into the business of it. And it's just like, as I've come up in the last, you know, 10 years, just gotten more and more exposed to that business side of it and how important it is to sort of, as much as it's not quite as fun, like nobody wants to go, I mean, maybe some people do, but I personally don't like need to do the networking, schmoozing, selling myself. Like, it's a little awkward for me. I like my work to sort of speak for itself.
Yeah.
But you got to do it. You got to put yourself out there, and I'm getting a lot better at it and just sort of figuring out what works for my personality to put it out there. But one of the things that we learned with the features and that whole process is that I kept running this problem where you spend all this time, like years on these movies, writing it and pre-production, shooting, editing, takes forever. Visual effects, whatever you have, and then like negotiating a deal. By the time you get it ready, maybe you're playing a festival, you're trying to promote this project, and you run into this problem where, okay, I have a thing done, but I can't show it to you yet because I have to save my premiere for like some festival down there, some theoretical screening that's going to maybe happen, and then you submit and you get rejected to all these festivals, and then you're like waiting and waiting and waiting just to put it out there.
Yeah.
And it was like this weird thing where it's like, we make this to show it. We make these projects to show to people. You want, the audience is such an important part of the equation that I wanted to sort of bridge that gap a little bit. And that's where like the idea of taking a feature length idea and breaking it into chapters and making an episodic version of it really started to appeal to myself and Nick, and we sort of were thinking, hey, if we can, you know, if we can make a little bite-sized piece, now I'm only competing for 8 minutes of your time, maybe 10 minutes of your time, versus 90-minute feature. If you're surfing on Netflix or Amazon or any wherever you find your films, it's hard to get someone to invest 90 minutes into your project, especially if you're independent and you're working with, you know, up-and-coming actors, yeah. And like you don't have a studio, you don't have the promotion and marketing teams behind you. You're doing it all yourself.
Yeah.
It's really hard to break through. And so our thinking
especially with the algorithm. Like, how do you even break through the algorithm? Like, so they see you. You know?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah,
and that's
totally
still
wild.
And that's still an issue with the episodic too. But I just feel like as far as like getting someone to take a chance on a project, it just seems like a 10-minute bite-sized thing that you can watch is a lot easier for people to jump in and easy for them to digest. And then
you
can kind of hook them in on characters, and then hopefully they'll go and check out the next episode. You can also don't have to do it all in one sitting. You can just like, you know, pick one off here and there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, seem to align better with the way people consume content nowadays. And so that was sort of the thinking behind episodic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially too, since you did commercials, you can sort of see the shortening it up, like the super tight. How do you get the message out in 30 seconds? Now you get 11 minutes. You're like, I got this. No
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, that's luxury. Suddenly,
between 72 minutes and 30 seconds, I got the middle ground.
But I still really like the feature length story arc.
Sure.
And so this project, like when you string it all together, we have 13 episodes of Shangri-La in season one, and they all come out to about just over 2 hours. So if you watch them back to back, it is like watching a feature film. Actually, one of the next phases for us is we're going to cut the whole project into a strung together feature version.
Yeah.
And so it kind of works both ways. You get that larger storytelling arc, and characters can develop over a little more time. But then you still can like just break it up and have a little bite-sized piece for people to consume. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
A good way to like put the business in too. You've had to deal with it, how to make it fun for yourself. Let's make these bite-sized pieces for people to grab. Super awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. And I also like the idea that you get to put it, you can put it together as a full-length film and sell it in a different way, or even just get the audience that wants the longer versus the audience that wants the shorter.
Yeah, and part of the thinking behind that is an idea that I learned at a different panel, at a different in LA at a filmmaker group, which is this idea that if you take the series and you make a 90-minute feature version, then you can sell that on international market. So you can basically recoup some of your expenses by just picking off a few $1,000s here and there from foreign markets, because they'll take a feature film over a series. Like the series will kind of have its home in the U.S. and then it can be sort of another version of it to put out to the rest of the world.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what a smart idea. I totally forget. I mean, I've talked to like 2 or 3 international filmmakers already and I totally forgot about it. Yeah. Like, there's a whole other world you can be selling to.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Japan will love it. They're like, is this what Los Angeles is like? I think it's fun.
Yeah, well, comedy's always a little tricky when they translate to different cultures, though. That is one thing I've heard.
Yeah,
like, the things that, sense of humors are so specific to where you grew up and what you know, and you're referencing things that maybe we get, but might not play in China or might not play, but you never know.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, you can find a couple other little markets for it and, you know, have a feature version of it too, so.
While I don't know, I'm going to posit that probably in other countries there's people that have hit hard times and they want to watch a hero go from his lowest point to figuring out how to be a little bit better in his life. Everyone's kind of has natural ups and downs. I find that the parts that I read and the parts that I watched of the series are very, you know, connected. Like, all of us feel these things. All of us have had hard times and not wanted to admit it or how to move forward when we're stuck in like a dream that is like, no, you can get your dream. You just have to adjust slightly. Even the lessons that you've told me that you personally have learned are like you making adjustments, knowing that the world, like if you had been like, no, I'm doing it this way, 16 millimeter forever in 2019. It'd be like, sorry, man, like, you can't do it. Adjustments are necessary. And it's, I feel like everyone could watch your web series and really feel connected to it.
Yeah, try to really make a universal story of striving for something bigger, or, you know, confronting the world and the characters that want something more out of life and then are sort of like stuck treading water. You know, it is a universal story, and this is a project, you know, people always say, you know, write what you know and make what you know. And that was partially when I started brainstorming this idea. It was like, what do I know? Well, I know like the struggle of the film world and the entertainment industry and sort of the absurdities that come along with that. So let's dive into that world for a little bit. But rather than tell it from like a very common perspective of like, you know, the middle class struggle, we were like, what if we put our characters on the streets and saw like what does the industry look like from that vantage point? And it is this phenomenon in Los Angeles that I've encountered since moving out there, is that there's a huge street transient population, and people, when you really stop and like meet people and talk to them, you start to realize that like a good number of people are like in LA for the industry, or like were part of it at one point and their singing career didn't pan out, but now they're going to be like the best at this karaoke night and they like own that instead, or like people that had a photo studio and it didn't quite pan out and so now they're like, you know, hawking camera gear on the street or something. And it was just like an interesting thing. I was like, oh, that's fascinating. And I really wanted to sort of give a voice to people that often are very one-dimensional in movies, you know, like homelessness is always portrayed in sort of like this really specific way where it's like that is the defining factor of that character is the homelessness. And we really want to do it in a way where we don't really talk about it like that. It's like these are just people like anybody else with their own dreams and struggles, and like the circumstances that they may find themselves in are not the defining factors of their lives.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, awesome. Sorry, I got deep into that. I'm all like, yeah, I am going to be okay. Oh, wait, it's not about me. Awesome. That's super, really, really great. One last question just to wrap it up. Tell me what for you is an idea or something that you've been working on that you're, like, excited about, even if it's something you're excited to talk about today or here at the festival or something you're hoping to learn. Like, what's the thing or what's your jam, what you've been thinking about lately creatively?
That's you know, I will say one of the things that's really been kind of, like, scratching at me creatively is music, which I know is sort of out of left field, but I did the soundtrack for this show. I composed it, and it was just like such a magical experience just to make all the songs and like learn some new software and learn how to like compose music in a way. I mean, I've always played music, but took it to a new level, and it was so great. I was just like thinking, you know, all the hours I put into these films, it's just a huge number, it's like years of work, and I would love to just sort of take a little hiatus and just only be a musician for like a little period of time and just see what I can do by like focusing just on the soundscape world and where that goes and where that leads. So that's sort of like one thing that's been sort of like, coming at me.
Yeah, you composed all the music. That's so amazing. Yeah. That's so great.
Yeah, you know, I really had to do everything. This is an indie project at its heart, so,
For real.
I'm doing the shooting, the directing, co-wrote it with Nick, and did the editing and visual effects on my computer, and then even composed the music. So, and it's really my baby. It's my baby.
Yeah. Well, good. Thank you so much for talking to me and sharing your stories about Shangri-La. I really appreciate you talking to me and sharing even your creative hopes and dreams. I hope everybody gets to make the kind of project that you get to make.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And if anybody wants to check out the show, you can find it on Amazon if you look for Shangri-La, or check our website at shangrilashow.com.
Yeah, right. Good.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.